just be eternally free, yes, and eternally young. Ooh.
What a beautiful world this will be. What a glorious time to be free.
WFM, that is our theme set for this first anniversary of the June 12th rally, and the bulk of it was suggested by a listener named Willie, who works for Central Sunoco in Westfield, New Jersey, and we thank him. This is Pete Fornatale. I'll be back with my special guests, Flo and Eddie, Mark Volman and Howard Kalin of the Turtles, right after these messages, beginning with Frank Perdue. Back with you on Mixed Bag, and I'll be talking to my special guests, Mark Volman and Howard Kalin of the Turtles, right after this.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me, ease my mind. Imagine how the world could be so very fine. So happy together.
At NEWFM, the Turtles and Happy Together, their only number one record, though they did have a string of hit recordings in addition to that one, and it has become, over the years, something of a signature song for the band and for Flo and Eddie.
It's kind of like, thanks for the memories.
Did you expect that? Did you see it that way at the time? Do you remember?
We knew it was going to be a hit record, strangely enough. I mean, you do get those sort of feelings from time to time when you're involved with a song like that. That one really did jump out of the pack of demo records that we had received. And even though the acetate that we had gotten from the two writers was scratched and sounded terrible, that song peeked its head right through the clouds and said, record me. And we did.
Why do you think it was the hit that it was, Mark?
That record, I think, was, if you take the lyrics and really analyze lyrically what it was saying, and the time frame that that record came out, which was pretty immense problems in America and
during the
war in Vietnam. The opening lines of that song paint a very picturesque thing. It starts out with an imaginary thought. Imagine me and you. And I think that line in itself opened up a thing in people's minds when they heard that record, that it was a fantasy record. It could have been me and you, any me and you, anybody that you really...
And you could be in a foxhole, you could be fantasizing about that teacher that you could never get your hands on, or that girl over there, or whatever. But
it wasn't
the promise of the things to come, the imagining of I can't see me loving nobody but you, was stronger than actually having possession of a girlfriend or of a person,
of knowing they had that relationship. This song didn't really ever solidify a relationship. It set it up immediately as imagine me and you, and then when it breaks into the release of the chorus of I can't see me loving nobody but you, and then you put the two together, that it's really just a dream that this fellow is having of any imaginary
picture yourself
lover,
by a boat, by a, you know.
Yeah,
you see.
And I think that this song really released a lot of people to be able to feel more inclined to have relationships, and it brought a lot of people together, that song. I still think that particular tune that we recorded brought
an awful lot. We single-handedly began the baby boom.
Now listen, it works on a different level today, though. You know what I'm saying? It had that thing going for it then, but when you hear it today, there's a whole second generation effect. I think all of the people who were...
What is that second generation?
All of
effect,
the people
Pete?
Who were conceived to it are now hearing it.
That's true.
For the first time, you know that?
Yeah.
That's true. We're seeing that in our audiences, too, from 13-year-olds
to 45-year-olds. We also say that about America. That's kind of... This song represents a lot to us as being American-born and bred, and true, coming out of high school, the American dream was really something that we were slung right into. To leave high school in 1965, out of 12th grade, and have a record become a top-five record in America, and be slung into this imaginary world of rock and roll history that all of a sudden became alive for us as a band that had just happened in high school, and then all of a sudden we were sung out on
the road. We were a surf band as performers, and then as singers, we were singers in a cappella choir and in our own little folk rock group. Folk, actually. It wasn't even folk rock. It was a straight folk group with just three acoustic guitars, and a girl singer.
Yeah, we had a girl singer.
The two of us.
What was her name? Amazing. Betty McCarty was her name. She was our girl singer. We were called the Crosswind Singers, which was really a derivative of our surfing band, which was called the Crossfires. Mm-hmm. And we performed with such notable acts as Joe and Eddie, and a few others that had come through our high school at the time. And we were like the opening act because of our... Everyone knew who we were. So we
wrote original tunes, which was very unusual for anybody in high school to have that much social awareness, or at least to purport to sing about such social awareness. They were listening to it, but the high school kids were really rock and rollers, and while we had that in us, I can remember owning every album the Kingston Trio ever made.
Sure, Bud and Travis.
All the Bud and Travis stuff. We were listening to all the Vanguard records that we could get our hands on, because that was the music of America. America really wasn't responsible at the time for anything more than Bobby V, and it was very rough to pin your social attitude and growing up on Charms, yeah. Pretty Little Charms.
Well, now, what you're describing here, of course, is that magical cross-pollination that took place in the mid-60s between rock and roll and
Absolutely.
American folk music.
Now, our first single record was a song that we actually did as the Crosswind Singers. I mean, it was part of our little show that we did. We did about five songs as the Crosswind Singers as an opening act, and we did like Bundawa, the Kingston Trio thing, and then Howard wrote a couple of songs that ended up on the very first Turtle album, Let the Cold Winds Blow, Wandering Kind.
Social protest stuff, yeah.
How did the Crosswind Singers evolve into the Turtles?
Well, it was really more that the Turtles needed songs to record. We found ourselves in a very folk rock bag, as you say here on this program, and looking around trying to discover new and original songs, we realized we had those social protest songs all the time. We didn't really have to start new or alter our perceptions. They were right there. We had been doing them. You know, we added a drummer and electric guitar, and those songs took on, you know, new meaning to some, but they were the same lyrically.
How did Bob Dylan become a part of your consciousness?
Well, we were just listening, again, just like we owned records. I mean, Howard and I grew up in pretty much the same white middle class American neighborhood. We both went to two different grammar schools. We both went to two different junior highs, and we met in high school. But we both had the same type of influences individually, which was a little scary when we finally started talking about this, even as late as a few years ago, realizing that we had the same clarinet teacher without even knowing each other. We were both studying clarinet and going to the same teacher. And so folk was just a part of my life, just like my father collected music, and I know that Howard's folks were always involved listening to music, so that we got those
show tunes and Freeburg and Louis and Keeley and everything
and
that you needed
Dylan
to know.
Bob Dylan was one of the most influential young up-and-coming writers when he did the early times. They Are a Changing records, and even before he got into the Bring It All Back Home, that era when he was in his real heavy folk.
Purity, yeah.
Yeah, the very pure folk from, he was just, the stuff he was doing from Minnesota when he was still just Bobby Zimmerman.
He was still just a virginal boy from the North Country at that time.
And we were just really picking up on it as part of the growing process of music that we were always filling our heads with. I know I went through Dixieland with being a clarinet player. I went into the folk era learning the comedy situations that Bud and Travis did. I mean, their whole relationship together on stage.
Through the Merry Minuet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Tom Lehrer songs.
How did you come to record It Ain't Me Big?
Well, this was one of the tunes that we did in the Crosswind Singers. Just kind of pushed it around on stage, just the five of us. There was me and Howard and Al Nickel, Chuck Ports playing a stand-up bass, and Al Nickel and Chuck ended up being the original bass player and guitarist with the Turtles, and then this Mary McCarty. And when we were playing rock, and we had done as the Crosswind Singers this tune, just because it was like It Ain't Me Baby, it was boy girl, and Howard actually sang it with Mary so that it gave it the boy girl effect. And when we became the Crossfires on Friday night at the Rock and Roll Club, we never would play the song. But when the Turtles made the transition into the Turtles, the Crossfires became the Turtles. And all of a sudden we had a 12-string guitar and we were singing Mr. Tambourine Man. And this new music was starting to affect us. And as Howard said, we started looking for material. This record company said, why don't you guys do three songs? And we started thinking about writing, and all of a sudden we said, boy, those songs that Howard had written for the Crosswind Singers, this Let the Cold Winds Blow, Let Them Blow, Let Them Blow, is a striking protest song for a 15-year-old to be writing, and Wandering Kind, which was kind of a derivative.
I had never wandered beyond Hollywood Boulevard. So you know, I had no boot heels. What was I talking
Amy
about?
Babe, having been on the White Album, as it was on the Bob Dylan White Times They Are Changing album, was one of the songs that we decided we would electrify. And it was a remarkable change.
I would have to say, quite honestly, that that Roger McGuinn had an awful lot to do with the direction that we were to take, because even though we followed him by only days, literally days, as far as obtaining a 12-string guitar of our own and not trying to cash in so much, but using this enormous fount of material that we already had and transposing it into a rock and roll showplace as he had done with his band, it gave us an unlimited source of material we didn't even know we had. Mm-hmm. And it opened up the term folk rock, I guess, to a whole generation of people like us from the Los Angeles or the San Francisco area, and
Roger
the Bo Brummels.
Roger would definitely have to be probably the father of folk rock if there was. I mean, his putting on the Rickenbacker 12-string string guitar and playing those opening chords to Mr. Tambourine Man with that electricity on that was just, that changed our whole career. I mean, sure. Our whole life was changed with those opening chords.
And so was Tom Petty's.
Yeah.
Can you bring things full circle for us by doing a little bit of that?
Sure. Yeah, we can. Ooh, yeah, it didn't have the opening bass thing, and it just really started the way that we did it.
Go away from my window. Leave at your own chosen speed. I'm not the one you want, babe. I'm not the one you need. And you say you're looking for someone who's never weak but always strong to protect you and defend you, baby, whether you are right or wrong. Someone to open each and every door, but ain't me, babe. No, no, no. Babe, go lightly on the ground. I'm not the one you want, babe. I'll only leave you down.
Betty would come in here.
You say you're looking for someone who promise never to part. Someone to close his eyes to you.
Close his
someone
eyes to,
close his heart. Someone who would die for you and more. But it ain't me, babe. No, 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 it ain't me, babe. Well, it ain't me you're looking for, babe. No, it ain't me you're looking for.
Absolutely terrific.
Thank you. That's kind of like the Crosswind Singers.
Yeah, that was real close to the way that we originally put the act together was out of our choir. And in choir, we had a sensational teacher by the name of Robert Wood who really taught us a lot about singing without knowing it. And that had a lot to do with the music that we have, I guess, stayed current with. He taught us a lot about madrigal singing and taught us a lot
harmonies and counterpoints.
A lot of spiritual stuff, too. We learned a lot of Greek and Latin spiritual music that taught us a lot about interweaving parts, and I'm sure that became very essential when we started doing the vocal arrangements on our later records.
You referred earlier to how that particular selection thrust you into this world of unreality.
Yes, it did.
The rock and roll world. Now we're pushed forward almost two decades, and a lot of people...
Oh, almost. It is. Howard and I met in 1962. So we've been together now 21 years. We met in February of 1962. And I've known Howard now longer than I even know my parents. I moved out of my house when I was 18 years old. So Howard and I are, I don't even know my dad as well.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is.
Howard, tell me about this man. What is he like? What is Mark Bowman really like?
Well, he's a very generous guy. I think he gives a lot of his time and of himself. You know, I think that there's a lot of humor there. And on a deeper level, that the humor is probably camouflaging a lot of deep feelings that he doesn't wish to express an awful lot of the time. Because, frankly, it brings an audience down when they know your inner feelings. When they see you, the happy buffoon kind of a guy, it lessens the pressure on the artist a little bit. And it allows a lot more artistic freedom, and you can get away with a lot more.
And Mark, in the course of 2 decades and more, a lot of other partnerships ended and didn't make it. A lot of lives were lost along the way. You two have survived. Why?
Well, we have a very deep conviction of our relationship together. I think without pushing it spiritually, we have a very strong spiritual bond together. I think we truly both believe in the essential work process, that working is truly what life's better part is all about. Working day to day is what really God gave us the power to do. To work at something that hopefully people will find entertaining and enjoy is really remarkable. To be able to have the life that we do, to enjoy it at the level that we enjoy performing it at. But I think the essential thing is knowing that as long as you live, you have to work to keep your heart motivating, your spirit in its right place, to keep your love and hate balances working constantly. And I think that what Howard and I have realized together is that as long as we have each other to work with on a one-to-one basis through life, you could never search for a better bounce off place. I feel that I can trust Howard. We're really beyond even talking. I mean, we know when either of us has gone too far. We know that we can promise things that we can pull off, even if we haven't done it before, because it becomes a test of how much a man can really do if he has no boundaries. And that's really what Flo and Eddie has given us. No boundaries.
We nudge each other along, you know. If one guy doesn't want to do it, the other guy's always there to say, come on, of course we can do it. And we can, because the synergy created between the two of us propels us further than just a normal partnership, whatever.
As an interviewer, on a number of occasions in the past, it is delightful to see the way the two of you, consciously or not, work with one another. It's almost like conducting an orchestra. It just flows.
Well, it's Eddie's.
That's
very great. I mean, that's not bad. That's like a river, you know. The flow and eddy of a river is the yin and yang. It is the flow downstream, and the eddy is the cross current that fights the actual flow of a river. So it is there is a little thought into what we've always been doing. We're thoughtful people. I think that Howard, I know somebody would say Howard is also a very sensitive and deep man who balances off me so much that there is just a real good balance. We're neither too serious nor too euphoric. We try and keep a real good balance in there so that we don't make people sick of us.
Leads me to my next question, which is that Flo and Eddie took up where the Turtles left off. The Turtles were on the shelf for quite some time,
yes.
But now 1983 is apparently the time revitalize the Turtles.
I've got my green jacket on,
Pete. It is a good time. I'll just briefly say that in 1970, when the group split up, we went into some awful litigation that prohibited us from using the Turtles' name. And in 1974, the name was again cleared. Howard and I could use the name in 1974. But we had joined Frank Zappa, and FM radio had become a predominant part of the music industry. Turtles was not the way to go in 1974. We were only going to use the names Flo and Eddie for one album, Chunga's Revenge, when we joined Frank Zappa as a temporary name. It just held on. It was a 12-year temporary break from being able to use what we really were.
And we still get away with Flo and Eddie when we are dealing with humor or satire or collegiate audiences or people that expect us to be, you know,
body
or a little on the blue side, the 40,000 people in America who do keep up with this cult following that we established, doing 200 motels or the things afterwards, as Flo and Eddie. We're not going to lose them or disappoint them, but the Turtles, I think, and we have seen this touring as the Turtles now for the last few weeks, for the first time in years, we have seen our audiences go from those cult people who are our age and slightly above to 12-year-old people and up to 45-year-old people, and they're all liking it.
And they're all coming out, which is something Flo and Eddie couldn't do. Flo and Eddie couldn't get the audiences out, and the Turtles name is allowing people the opportunity to come out and see the fun show and the variety and the show that we do, which we've tried to do in New York now because it has been singly one of the few cities that understood what Flo and Eddie were all about. Now we're taking it around the country and finding that our show is being picked up. Really, it's amazing now that
Flo and Eddie was a defense for us. I think we took the name also just because we could say, well, we only play in New York City. They're the only place that understands us because we're Flo and Eddie and da-da-da. But basically, we're the same people on stage. There is humor in the Turtle show. There always was. You know, we were always a very funny band to see in person, even though we made those records sound just the same in person as they did on disc.
I was still flipping those tambourines and making a fool out of myself.
I think it has a lot to do, and I dare I say it, with packaging, with the mere merchandising of the name. To not call ourselves the Turtles and yet to be the Turtles all these years has been semi-frustrating because we would be recognized on the street and we would always be, oh, Flo and Eddie, the Turtle guys.
Right.
And now we can
now
be that.
Now we're just the Turtles, and we were Flo and Eddie and people. We're both. We're all of those things, and the Turtles allows us now to repackage, and I say, as Howard says, we want the audiences around the United States to see our show, and if by using the name Turtles with Flo and Eddie, we'll bring out a wider age bracket and a wider audience, the show is the important thing, that when they leave, the feeling they have,
it's
the
not,
attitude.
You know,
the Turtles was an attitude. It was a real good, positive attitude.
We haven't reformed the association here, and this isn't Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
No, we're not looking for a record deal. I don't really, if something came along, it might be interesting to think about making a single, but I honestly say we're not pursuing it. We don't make a living off of records. Nobody does. So that's a whole other interview.
Yeah. It's the difference between touching a responsive chord in the mass audience or just the, quote, cognoscenti.
I think we played up to our cult audiences for 12 years, and we took it about as far as Flo and Eddie could, and I really feel like we want to spread out and bring in a wider audience. I want the kids to know that the people who are the Turtles are the same people who worked on Strawberry Shortcake and the Care Bears and all of the children's projects, because now all of a sudden knowing that the Turtles are involved with Strawberry Shortcake is really easy to swallow, and it's a much, much cleaner process of us getting involved in more children's things, and we really enjoy working with children and seeing their faces when they see us, and it brings their parents and their children close together when they come to our show, because the parents grew up with our songs, and then we do those songs and the kids heard them on the air, and they see us play with our little stuffed animals on stage and throw them through hoops of fire and stuff. And then the kids hold their parents' hands and they walk out of the together out of seeing one of our shows, just to, even for that 1 hour, they realize they have something in common.
That's a real nice image in this time of isolation among families.
Well, hopefully the name Turtles does that, you know, and brings a smile to the face and maybe a memory of something very happy from the past for the parents and something new and current for the kids.
There was a song at the height in those heady days of folk rock when you and the Birds and Dylan himself were spearheading this whole thing. There was a song. It was one of those one-hit things that came and went very fast, but I think it still has as much relevance
today. It's interesting that we were offered this song. The Turtles, P.F. Sloan wrote Let Me Be, which was our follow-up to It Ain't Me, Babe. And P.F. Sloan came to the Trip, which was a club in Hollywood where all the folk rockers played, and we were having a rehearsal one day as the Turtles, and he sat down on the stage at the club and he said, I got this song, it's going to be a huge hit record, and you're the perfect protest band to do this. And we heard him play this song and we looked at each other and went,
too heavy, are you kidding?
Are you telling us?
You're never going to get that played on the radio. You got to be
and,
nuts.
Just recently, just reading the news, and I know both of us are very concerned about what's going on in America all the time. I mean, we like working with kids. kids, and we want the kids to be able to see what good things there are in America. But this song, all of a sudden, has an awful lot of relevance again for what was going on. And
the Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, oh, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. And now, don't you understand what I'm trying to say? And can't you feel the fears that I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, oh, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Well, now think of all the hate that there is in Red China, and take a look around you to Selma, Alabama. 'Cause you may leave here for 2 weeks in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. You'll hear the pounding of the drums and the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace. And tell me over and over and over and over again, my friends, oh, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. No, 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 you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Still true.
Mark Volman and Howard Kalin, The Turtles Forever at NEWFM.
Thank you, Peter.
WFM, Flo and Eddie from the Moving Targets album, and Keep It Warm. My thanks to Mark Volman and Howard Kalin of the Turtles for being our guests on the program today. They are terrific people. We wish them all good things, and we'll be back with more Mixed Bag right after these words.
Hey, it's not loud enough.
Enough, proud enough, when you just can't get enough. You're ready for American Passion, the new musical all about you and what you're all about. American Passion.
Hey, it's not loud enough. If it's not loud, it's not proud enough.
Hey, American Passion, the new musical at the Joyce Theater. Call 242-0800 or Ticketron. American Passion.